I am Neo. Welcome into the Skeptic Arena. Today is October 18th, 2009. The website is theskepticarena.com. Today's topic, Pakistani public opinion. Pakistanis see their country in crisis. They give their national government lower ratings than at any time in this decade, and almost no one is satisfied with national conditions. Crime and terrorism are seen as major problems by virtually everyone, and huge percentages of Pakistanis also see their country struggling mightily with corruption and a deteriorating economy. A long-standing concern about Islamic extremism has grown even greater over the past year. No fewer than 69% of the Pakistanis questioned worried that extremists could take control of the country. At the same time, indifference and mixed opinions about both Al-Qaeda and the Taliban have given way to a strong condemnation of both groups. In 2008, just 33% held a negative view of the Taliban. Today, 70% rate it unfavorably. Similarly, the percentage of Pakistanis with an unfavorable opinion of Al-Qaeda has jumped from 34% to 61% in the last year. However, growing concern about Islamic extremism has not resulted in an improved view of the United States. Opinions of America and its people remain extremely negative. Barack Obama's global popularity is not evident in Pakistan, and America's image remains as tarnished in that country as it was in the Bush years. Only 22% of Pakistanis think the U.S. takes their interests into account when making foreign policy decisions, essentially unchanged from 21% in 2007. Fully 64% of the public regards the U.S. as an enemy, while only 9% describe it as a partner. Further, many express serious concerns about the U.S.-led effort to combat terrorism, both globally and in Pakistan specifically. In particular, many who are aware of the drone strikes targeting extremist leaders believe these strikes are causing too many civilian deaths and are being carried out by the U.S. without the consent of the Pakistani government. However, for all the anti-American sentiment, the new survey by the Pew Research Center's Global Attitudes Project also finds an openness to improving relations with the U.S. and considerable support for the idea of working with it to combat terrorism. By a margin of 53% to 29%, Pakistanis say it is important that relations between the two countries improve. Moreover, many endorse U.S. assistance for the Pakistani government in its fight with extremist groups. Nearly three-fourths of those interviewed would support U.S. financial and humanitarian aid to areas where extremist groups operate. As many as 63% back the idea of the U.S. providing intelligence and logistical support to Pakistani troops who are combating these groups. And after being asked about these forms of cooperation between Pakistan and the U.S., nearly half then say they would favor U.S. missile strikes against extremist leaders. It is not surprising that American cooperation with the Pakistani military is popular, given the confidence that Pakistanis have in it. As many as 86% say the military is having a good influence on the country, which is far greater than the number who feel that way about the police, 39%, the courts, 58%, and even religious leaders, 64%. Only 36% say the Directorate for Inter-Services Intelligence is having a good impact, although many respondents, 41%, do not offer an opinion. These are the latest findings from the 2009 Pew Global Attitudes Survey of Pakistan. Face-to-face interviews were conducted with 1,254 adults in Pakistan between May 22nd and June 9th of 2009. The sample, which is disproportionately urban, includes Punjab, Sindh, Baluchistan, and the Northwest Frontier Province. However, portions of Baluchistan are not included because of instability. The federally administered tribal areas were not surveyed. The area covered by the sample represents approximately 90% of the adult population. Long-running concerns about India are also reflected in the poll. The dispute between Pakistan and India over Kashmir is cited as a major problem facing the country by no fewer than 88%. And growing worries about extremism notwithstanding, more Pakistanis judge India as a very serious threat to the nation, 69%, than regard the Taliban, 57%, or Al-Qaeda, 41%, as very serious threats. Most Pakistanis see the U.S. as on the wrong side of this issue, by a margin of 54% to 4%. The U.S. is seen as favoring India over Pakistan. While fears about India persist, Pakistanis express overwhelmingly positive opinions about another Asian giant. 84% have a favorable view of China, and 80% consider China a partner to their country. One of the ironies in the survey is the extent to which Pakistanis embrace some of the severe laws associated with the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, even as they reject Islamic extremism and these extremist groups. The new poll finds broad support for harsh punishments. 78% favor death for those who leave Islam. 80% favor whippings and cutting off hands for crimes like theft and robbery, and 83% favor stoning adulterers. I'll break in at this point to make a little comment. Those percentages represent the subhumans within that culture. That doesn't leave very many modern civilized humans. Evolution has completely missed 80% of that population. Back to the article. Pakistani public opinion departs significantly from the Taliban on the issues of girls' education and extremist violence. As many as 87% of Pakistanis believe it is equally important for boys and girls to be educated. The poll also finds that support for suicide bombing that targets civilians in defense of Islam remains very low. Only 5% of Pakistani Muslims believe these kinds of attacks can often or sometimes be justified. As recently as 2004, roughly 41% held this view. I will break in again with another comment. It sounds like their views took on a more realistic view when some of their own relatives became the innocent victims of those subhuman fanatics. Back to the story. Fully 87% now say such attacks can never be justified, the highest percentage among the Muslim publics included in the 2009 survey. Analysis of the survey data finds a number of important patterns regarding views of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. First, both groups are unpopular across the board. Among all the major subgroups within Pakistani society analyzed in the study, negative views of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda outweigh positive views. Second, support for both groups is low even among those who agree with some of the severe punishments endorsed by the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, such as stoning adulterers, cutting off hands, and executing people who leave Islam. Still, those who disagree with these harsh measures are somewhat more likely to express an unfavorable view of both groups. For instance, among Pakistanis who support the death penalty for people who leave Islam, 69% have a negative view of the Taliban, while 77% of those who oppose the death penalty in such cases give the Taliban a negative rating. Third, education plays a role in views about extremism. Pakistanis with higher levels of education are consistently more likely to reject the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. Fourth, the Taliban and Al-Qaeda tend to be unpopular across regions where government forces are currently fighting extremist groups. However, Sindh stands out as the region with the most negative views. For example, 82% in Sindh have a negative opinion of the Taliban, compared with 67% in Punjab. More than half in Baluchistan do not offer opinions about the Taliban or Al-Qaeda. Another comment, those would be the ones who are scared out of their wits to even voice an anonymous opinion. Back to the article. Fifth, and perhaps unsurprisingly, views about the Taliban are linked to the extent to which people believe the country is threatened by extremist groups. Analysis of the data shows that people who think extremist groups may be able to seize control of the country are more likely to voice negative views about the Taliban, which has been engaged in armed conflict with the Pakistani government. The nation-state is of great significance to Pakistanis, and despite important ethnic and regional differences, national identity is strong throughout the country. Overall, 89% say they think of themselves first as Pakistani rather than as a member of their ethnic group. Pakistani President Zardari's ratings have plummeted. Last year, 64% had a favorable opinion of him. Now, just 32% hold this view. Zardari is much less popular than the other public figures tested. Opposition leader Sharif, 79% favorable. Prime Minister Jilani, 67%, and Chief Justice Shaduri, 61%. About 72% want the U.S. and NATO to remove their military troops from Afghanistan as soon as possible. Only 16% approve of Obama's decision to send more troops to Afghanistan. In 2008, 53% said the economy would improve in the next 12 months. This year, only 23% believe the economy will get better. The Pakistani media receives very high ratings. 77% say it is having a good influence on the country. While views about national conditions are overwhelmingly negative, most Pakistanis are upbeat about their personal lives. 74% say they are very or somewhat satisfied with their overall lives, and most are satisfied with their family lives and incomes. Nonetheless, compared with other nations, levels of personal satisfaction in Pakistan are relatively low. And now we move to the science segment. Today's subject, exceptionally well-preserved dinosaur fossils uncovered in northeastern China display the earliest known feathers. The creatures are all more than 150 million years old. The new finds are indisputably older than Archaeopteryx, the oldest recognized bird discovered in Germany. I'll butt in with a note there. That is actually incorrect. Archaeopteryx was not a bird, but a transitional species between dinosaurs and birds. It had two features found in reptiles, but never found in birds. One, a pubic peduncle, and two, a long bony tail. Now back to the article. Professor Xu, Xing, and colleagues tell the journal Nature that this represents the final proof that dinosaurs were ancestral to birds. The theory that birds evolved from dinosaurs has always been troubled by the absence of feathers more ancient than those on the famous Archaeopteryx. This has given critics room to question the idea. But the new fossils, which come from two separate locations, are in most cases about 10 million years older than the German bird discovered in the late 19th century. One of the dinosaurs, named Anchiornis huxleyi, is spectacular in its preservation. It has extensive plumage covering its arms and tail, and also its feet. A four-winged arrangement, says Professor Zhu, from the Chinese Academy of Science in Beijing. The first specimen we discovered earlier this year was incomplete. Based on that specimen, we named it Anchiornis, and we thought it was a close relative of birds. But then we got a second specimen, which was very complete, beautifully preserved. Based on this second specimen, we realized that this was a much more important species, and definitely one of the most important species for our understanding of the origin of birds and of their flight. Professor Xu believes the four-winged shape may have been a very important stage in the evolutionary transition from dinosaurs to birds. Details of the latest discoveries have been presented this week at the annual meeting of the Society of Vertebrate Paleontologists being held this year at the University of Bristol in the UK. The renowned Bristol paleontologist Michael Benton said the announcement was immensely exciting. Drawing the Tree of Life, it's fairly obvious that feathers arose before Archaeopteryx appears in the fossil record. Now these fantastic new discoveries by Professor Zhu Jing prove that once and for all. These new discoveries are maybe 10 million years older than Archaeopteryx. And now the arena goes abroad. Today we go to Aceh, where they passed an adultery stoning law. About 98% of Aceh's population is thought to be Muslim. Indonesia's province of Aceh has passed a new law making adultery punishable by stoning to death. The law also imposes severe sentences for rape, homosexuality, alcohol consumption, and gambling. Opponents had tried to delay the law, saying more debate was needed because it imposes capital punishment. Sharia law was partially introduced in Aceh in 2001 as part of a government offer to pacify separatist rebels. And I'll butt in here with a comment. That's the result of multiculturalism. You don't stand up and fight for your freedom of speech and your freedom of religion. You cave in to terrorism, and here are the results. Back to the article. A peace deal in 2005 ended the 30-year insurgency, and many of the former rebels have now entered Aceh's government, which enjoys a degree of autonomy from the central government in Jakarta. The legislation was passed unanimously by Aceh's regional legislature. This law will be effective in 30 days with or without the approval of Aceh's governor. The governor of Aceh, a former rebel with the Free Aceh movement, is opposed to strict Sharia law. He had urged more debate over the bill. Married people convicted of adultery can be sentenced to death by stoning. Unmarried people can be sentenced to 100 lashes with a cane. Isn't it great to live in the 21st century? Back to the article. Muslim men in Aceh are expected to attend prayers every day. I'll break in again. That's what will be the future of the United States if the fundamentalists are allowed to achieve their Christian nation. Back to the article. Previously, Aceh's partially adopted Sharia law enforced Muslim dress codes and mandatory prayers. This law is a preventative measure for Achni's people so that they will avoid moral degradation. A new parliament will be sworn in next month after local polls saw the moderate Aceh party win the most seats in the provincial assembly. The Aceh party has said it will review the law once the new parliament is sitting. It needs more public consultation. We need to involve the ulemas, the Islamic clerics, in drafting the law. About 90% of Indonesia's 235 million people are Muslim, practicing a moderate form of the religion. And now we move to the final segment of the show, famous quotes. Today, Lewis Thomas, born 1913, died 1993 at the age of 80. He was a physician, poet, etymologist, essayist, administrator, educator, policy advisor, and researcher. Sounds like a busy man. Thomas was born in Flushing, New York, and attended Princeton University and Harvard Medical School. He became dean of Yale Medical School and New York University School of Medicine, and president of Memorial Sloan Kettering Institute. He was invited to write regular essays in the New England Journal of Medicine and won a National Book Award for the 1974 collection of those essays, The Lives of a Cell, Notes of a Biology Watcher. He also won a Christopher Award for this book. Many of his essays discuss relationships among ideas or concepts using etymology as a starting point. Others concern the cultural implications of scientific discoveries and the growing awareness of ecology. The Lewis Thomas Prize is awarded annually by the Rockefeller University to a scientist for artistic achievement. And now for the quote from Lewis Thomas. We need science, more and better science, not for its technology, not for leisure, not even for health or longevity, but for the hope of wisdom which our kind of culture must acquire for its survival.
Are you ready, Goose? Start walking.